So firstly, I would like to, in a way, apologise because I'm going to try and navigate the detailed and often dry issues of architecture and building and planning and numbers and not be addressing the very significant social issues and community issues that are bound up in a project like this. So, but that's my job. And what I've been asked to do is to navigate some information to set the scene behind the political concerns that have been raised. So urban growth, it has projects in and around the city, which includes White Bay, Fish Markets, Bank Street, Wentworth Park in the Bays District, and central to Everleigh, and as well Green Square Town Centre. And for those unfamiliar with what Landcom has become, urban growth is its successor. And in a way, it could be characterised as having three roles. Facilitator of priority development, a developer of defined government land, and a seller and recycler of defined assets, such as the Australian Technology Park. The shareholder owners are the Treasurer and the Minister for Finance and Services. It has a small board chaired by former Liberal leader John Broughton. Now, urban growth have about 20 projects in New South Wales, and central to Everleigh is just one of them on their books. And Metro Sydney, in terms of their organisation, is divided into two areas. And central to Everleigh comes under the CBD projects portfolio. So urban growth have these varying roles as facilitator, as developer, as asset seller. And these are, in a way, important roles for governments to keep complex projects on track. And of course, C2E is the largest project by far. And really there are three elements from that project to do with Waterloo. So the first is the idea of establishing a C2E study area to progress wider rezonings for renewal. The second is defining a Waterloo Station infrastructure contribution area. And the third is the redevelopment of the Waterloo estate itself. A proposed study area, which the Lord Mayor showed an image of, covers seven new precincts or neighbourhoods. We think that this represents, in a way, a zone of influence around rail station investments and upgrades, such as Central, Redfern and Waterloo. It most likely means encouraging further development within that vicinity. And according to an urban growth assessment, renewal within the blue line could deliver between 29,000 to 56,000 additional residents and between 14,000 and 25,000 new workers. And the study area as drawn covers around 560 hectares or 21% of the City of Sydney local government area of 2,615 hectares and is almost twice the area of the wider Green Square urban renewal area. And the question is, in many ways, who is undertaking this study and for what strategic purpose? But it should also be appreciated that an array of government-owned sites do fall within the study area, such as the Erskineville estate, the Pottery and the Northcote estates, the former Riley Street Public School, the vacant Osgrid site, Goulburn Street car park site and Lee Street offices, just to name a few. I'm not saying that any of these sites, to my knowledge, have been publicly identified by Urban Growth or the Department for Investigation at this stage. Now, many of you would recall in May 2014, the idea of a wider context was subject to some illustrations in Urban Growth presentations, one of which was held at this site. And since about that time, we at the City have been trying to understand the thinking and the feasibility underpinning the illustrations, and we have raised our concerns and had discussions with Urban Growth officers regarding both implied and target densities in certain locations. And this station illustration shows some new towers near the proposed Waterloo Rail Station. But I also note that there are currently two 30-storey towers and four 16-storey towers on the Waterloo Estate in approximately this location from the 1970s, mid-70s, which are proposed to be demolished. Now, this illustration, which you saw before, has been used in presentations and is on the website of Urban Growth, suggests what might come out of such a study. And that's fair enough. It helps us to understand thinking. The orange buildings are coded as 18 to 32 stories. The yellow are 9 to 17 stories. The blue are up to 8 stories. And you'll note it shows predominantly 8 stories and some 9 to 17 stories along the length of Redfern Street, with 18 to 32 storey towers along Elizabeth Street on the edge of the Redfern Estate. Now, this is said to be indicative only of development outcomes in the area, which could support a range of additional residents and workers that I mentioned. However, they do line up, this illustration does line up very closely with the detailed photo montages that have been provided in various locations. So that's the blue line zone, the study area. The second is basically a value capture zone for rail investment, in particular Waterloo. Now, city submissions to date broadly support structured and appropriate contributions for local infrastructure, such as a green square, to help pay for good streets and parks and community facilities to support renewal as it happens. The station infrastructure contribution area, which is what that SIC stands for, really refers to land that could be rezoned, upzoned, to pay a value capture levy towards the station cost. Initially, the area boundary came within 100 metres of the Green Square Rail Station and included Redfern Station as well. And it's recommended that any area be a genuine catchment. And so mapping of this area is being worked on by the Department of Planning and Urban Growth. But of course, any levy that should be applied, as it is in Green Square, should be applied through the city's planning controls. So what could be rezoned is the question within any SIC zone. To get a sense of the sites that fall within that area, the magenta colour shows the government-owned and Urban Growth land holdings. And this overlay shows the conservation areas in our plan of controls, in hatched red. And this overlay in aqua shows the Green Square urban renewal area with its already highly structured contributions framework, which recovers at best 79% of our costs in providing the local infrastructure. And this overlay in yellow, south, shows the recent Southern Enterprise Zone, where there is a lesser degree, but some overlap. The area available in white in the centre is the Botany Road corridor, which is mainly a mixed small business zone lining the arterial road with some strata residential approvals interspersed. Now the third component. And this is the renewal targets for the Waterloo estate. It's not about renewal, it's about the targets that are being worked on in the current iteration of the scheme. To set the scene, in recent times the government adopted a policy called Communities Plus. And this policy says that renewal scenarios, that is social housing renewal scenarios, should deliver around 30% social housing and 70% affordable and market housing. And of course across the state and across metro area, there are different examples of density in social housing estates. The densest of them in existence is Waterloo. So if you apply that direct translation of that formula, it means that the social housing sites have to triple, 3.3 in fact, times the yield, that whatever the density might have been to start with. And to retain existing social housing numbers, in this case 2,000 social housing, you end up with a renewal ratio of 6,666, which I suspect has been rounded up to 7,000. Now back in 2011, the renewal plans, which we looked over in great detail, was for 7,000 units across both the Redfern and the Waterloo estates. We examined all 21 blocks. Across those estates, we've made individual recommendations for every block. These were based on their size, their context, the existing streetscapes, and issues and recommendations were made and are on the public record. And one of those recommendations was that there was some potential to increase the densities if a station is located at Waterloo. But we put a table of what those densities are. And that is nothing like what is currently being proposed. And we're also at the point where planning control is to be removed from the city, declaring the site state significant. And this concern is that those new targets creates expectations beyond what is reasonable and best practice in renewal. So the current proposal is for 7,000 dwellings just on the 19-hectare Waterloo site. And this number, as I mentioned, alone raises the issue of a target exceeding the balance between amenity and commonly held standards of good residential design. So I'm going to take the great risk of trying to explain this, and I'm sure there are a number of people in the audience who will challenge my attempt to create comparisons to help humanise these numbers. But I hope that I'm trying to give some clarity to comparisons. So the simple formula, 7,000 dwellings over 19 hectares is 368 dwellings per hectare. That's mental arithmetic. Okay. And so if 1.9 people on average, which is our green square average, live in those dwellings, but maybe they don't, it could be a different number, but if it was the green square model, that's 700 residents per hectare, absolutely. What is important in raising these issues is the size of the site at around 20 hectares as a large precinct. It's not a district, but it's a large precinct, and that the density proposed is for the full extent of the large precinct, not just a site or a small project or a pocket project, but over the full 20 hectares. And so most people don't know whether to think about these numbers as being good or bad. And so, as I mentioned, I'm going to venture into that territory fraught with danger. So Waterloo itself currently, its high density starting point is 210 people per hectare. And this challenge is how to, if you're going to renew the site, work to expectations that ultimately for the development community are achievable, approvable. And so we recently advised the minister that this target across a large site of 20 hectares, not 3 or 4 hectares, but 20, in our view, could not meet commonly accepted standards for dwelling amenity. And that is both for the proposed dwellings and for neighbouring dwellings that are affected by the dwelling. And it wouldn't meet the city's standards for public parks or open space. And so I'm going to make this risk and suggest, and please note my qualifications for professionals in the room, that for a large planned precinct of around 20 hectares or more, around 20 hectares, I know it's 19, there is yet to be a precedent for a proposal of 368 dwellings per hectare. And I just note here a range of international developments on sites over 10 hectares, large precincts above 10, let's say 10 to 20, don't come anywhere near that. And of course, the smaller you go, smaller precincts under 10 have a greater chance of getting to high densities, right down to individual towers on their own lot, you could say, have absolutely high densities, but they don't represent major neighbourhood environments. Obviously don't provide open space either. So I've also noted some smaller precincts under 10 hectares that you could argue broadly comply with our common apartment amenity standards, like Discovery Point and Darling Quarter. Darling Quarter, which really pushes the envelope at 260 to 290 dwellings per hectare. So I'll just quickly look at a few of those. Again, above 10 hectares in the large precinct zone, Elephant Park, is considered very dense in the UK, London, and that's 70% of the Waterloo target. Battersea, the renewal of Battersea Power Station, quite controversial, currently being backed by Malaysian development interests, is running at 58% the density of Waterloo. Discovery Point, we're now getting into the smaller ones, 6 hectares, the small precincts, 71% density of Waterloo. Victoria Park, one, is actually being completed broadly, which runs along Southern Cross Drive. There are a number of towers, you will note. Covers 24 hectares, that's not a bad comparison. It's in that 20 hectare range. Is 35% of the density of what's proposed. And of course, I'm often reminded of Central Park. Central Park, which is a 6.9 hectare, that is the smaller precinct development in the city, which has 88% of, when it's completed, the density of Waterloo, but on many scores fails those amenity controls. And this is actually a good example of hitting the envelope. And because this scheme, which covers 6.9, has become a little bit of a sort of pushback reference point, I think, by some of the people supporting the Waterloo scheme, is that when you put them side by side in order to get it up to the scale of around 20 hectares, you will find the significant difficulty in doing that because of the way these towers have been arranged on the site. I won't go into the detail, but suffice it to say, large parts of this development don't meet the commonly held apartment objectives. And some significant workarounds and arguments were used with the Planning Assessment Commission to get it approved. So I'm not going to go there, but I just thought for the argument's sake, obviously when you get even larger areas or districts, that average people per hectare or densities will fall. The smaller it is, the higher you can go and the denser you can be. 20 hectares is the key issue for us, for Waterloo. It's a big precinct, and you can see now, without drawing any conclusions, that the Green Square Urban Renewal Area, which is only quoted as a large urban renewal area or district of 278 hectares or more, has around 220 residents on average. And as a matter of fact, for a 278 hectare area in Australia, there isn't any other example. You can always quote smaller locations that have got higher densities, but not over that area of 278 hectares. So just to conclude, the issues, unlike Green Square Town Centre, where the city is both a statutory planner and a consent authority, also the consultation manager and the provider of community facilities, the concern is the draft proposal for the department is to replace the City of Sydney as lead in the study area. And you'll note here that the Green Square Town Centre is on the Urban Growth website as working with the City of Sydney and is regarded as being a success. The study area requires an infrastructure audit. It has to deal with open space, it needs to deal with schools, childcare, all of the issues that we would normally do in an urban renewal scenario. I'm not saying they won't get there, but this is our advice. Department of Transport current and projected traffic performance needs to be released as a base case. We can't get that, and they don't. They say they don't have that either. And the extent and stated purpose of the investigation area should be reduced and clarified respectively to avoid the unintended side effects of elevating landowner expectations generally. We've already had two proposals for rezoning on the strength of that blue line, giving a sort of permission to us to change the planning controls. Conservation areas should be removed. And obviously there needs to be an alignment between economic strategies for the broader metro area in developing the inner city area as well. This station infrastructure contribution area needs to reflect that analysis that I showed of the overlays that realise what's possible. The conservation areas should not be the transition zones for the built-up proposals. If there are transition zones required, they should be within the redevelopment area, which is what we do at Green Square. And of course, any rezoning scenario should be led by density done well. Principles, the apartment design guide provides a very widespread and common set of standards and objectives. And any contribution plan, and I'm sure the developers in here will agree, must provide for a good balance of local contributions commensurate with the local infrastructure needs and costs, and not just be substituted by state infrastructure areas that do away with the local contributions. I'm not suggesting that that is being proposed, but it's a risk. So high density levels in this proposal, in our view, are very likely to exceed and not deliver the 70% apartments with solar access, the 60% apartments cross-ventilated. They are likely to get more than 50% of winter oversharing of any provided parks, overshadowing the surrounding residential neighbourhoods, and probably means there's insufficient everyday retail to avoid unnecessary vehicle movements. So in conclusion, a reference scheme for the Waterloo Estate really needs to be rigorously assessed by the city to test that density done well can be achieved. For new dwellings, the use of public space, for the surrounding neighbourhood, appropriate tree canopy achieved, good urban design outcomes and appropriate traffic generation. And any renewal scenario should be led by designing the open space first, applying the quality development principle controls developed by the city and the Green Square. Thank you.